and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. So, still here.
Still here. Why wouldn't you be?
Well, because last week the rapture was supposed to happen. And I was on holiday. I thought, well, if the rapture happens when I'm on holiday, that's probably a good time for it to happen, right?
Wouldn't you feel a bit shortchanged?
Not really, because I'd be away. The last thing I'd see would be some sort of sea panorama as opposed to Thornton Heath High Street.
Well, that's one plus, but I mean, how many days into your holiday was the rapture supposed to be? I did hear a bit about this.
3 days into the holiday, the rapture would have happened.
Of a week-long holiday?
Yeah.
I'd have been fuming. I would have thought I'd got another 4 days of this lovely coastal view, and now it's been taken away from me.
Well, unless, of course, I was one of God's chosen ones, and then I could have probably had the rest of the holiday before having to take on whatever work he deemed worthy of me.
Now, with your, and I don't want to sound rude, but with your 40 years of experience, do you feel like you're one of God's chosen favourites?
No. I mean, I don't really fully understand the whole rapture thing. I think if it's basically the second coming, right? And then I think all of those that have died and were followers would be risen from the dead, right? That's when they all come back. And I don't know what happens to the rest of us. Are we all burned? I don't really know what happens to the rest of us.
Yeah, I heard a lot of this through Mrs. Ben, actually, who was talking to me. I just sort of, I heard bits of it on the internet and largely dismissed it as nonsense. But she was telling me someone she was listening to rattling on about it was had I think, gone ahead and sold all of their earthly possessions because they wouldn't be needing them anymore. And they're just, and I thought, well, hang on a minute, two things here. Why bother? Why bother going to the effort of doing all this extra work when, A, there's an outside chance you could be wrong? I know you believe you're right. Fair enough. But also, what do you need the money for?
Why aren't you giving it away? Yeah. I did see someone that gave their car away. They didn't ask money for it. They gave their car away because they thought the rapture was coming. I mean, I don't see, without knowing the full details of the rapture, who's going to have use of a car after the rapture?
If you gave me your car, I know you recently got rid of your car, but if you still had it hypothetically and you gave it to me because you believed the rapture was happening on the Tuesday, on the Wednesday, would you have the brass neck to come knocking at my door saying, well, this is awkward? Because I'd think, well, you did give it to me.
Well, I think part of the thing is here that let's say that you and I aren't going to be part of the chosen ones once the rapture occurs, Ben.
Yeah.
I don't think we're instantaneously destroyed. As I understand it now, having looked at this a little deeper in the last 30 seconds, we, as non-believers, Ben, we won't notice what's happening straight away until we start seeing a chunk of the population absent from the streets because they have been raptured. They've gone. They've gone into the clouds, or they're now looking like Jesus, I think is the idea, right? And then Jesus comes back to defeat his enemies. So therefore, does that mean that you and I have got to sort of fight Jesus? We got to take, because then if I've got a car, that could be useful if I have to ram him if he's coming at me with some sort of divine spear.
I'm not a religious man, but I mean, I'd find it quite awkward, you know, if Jesus challenged me to a fight. I'd say, hang on, I might not believe, mate, but I'm not gonna hit Jesus. I'm not gonna go down in history as the guy who had a fisticuffs with Jesus.
Well, maybe he's defeating us with logic puzzles or something. It might not be violence. I'm assuming that he's coming to defeat us in some sort of war. But what if it's like a massive heavenly only connect scenario, and he defeats us? If we can't solve the wall in 2.5 minutes, then presumably we're sent to the fires of hell.
Well, yeah, and as for you saying that you don't think we'd notice immediately, or that's what they believe you seem to imply, what about all the workforces who are suddenly like very short on staff when a large portion of the workforce don't bother turning up and can't be contacted? What about all the clothes strewn all over the streets inexplicably? Because I believe you get raptured up in the nude.
Do you? Well, that's not in this little bit of information.
What do you need clothes for in heaven? Think about it.
You've got to have some dignity, haven't you? even in heaven, I don't want to be seeing bits and pieces flapping about. This is new information, Ben, being raptured in the nude.
And I'm not sure, you know, I'm not a vain man, but I don't like the idea. I mean, would I be invisible to non-believers whilst I'm being raptured? Because I don't like the idea of, if I was floating directly above you in the buff and you were to look up, I don't imagine that would be a sight for to be enjoyed. I don't imagine that would be good for anyone.
No, but my advice is if the rapture happens, and it didn't happen last week, as it was suggested, but it was some pastor online, I think a South African pastor who initially gave the date of September the 23rd as the date of the rapture. It didn't happen, but I mean, you know what this is like. It's a movable feast often in
religious
circles.
We'll come back to that, because that is the obvious next question. So carry on with what you were going to say.
But my advice is, if the rapture comes at any point and you'll find yourself being raptured, don't look up. That is basically the advice. If we are all going up in the nude, I don't think you want to be looking up.
Oh, God, my eyes. Yeah, that would be awful. Awful. Just imagine that. Because then you might think you're being, like, burned alive or something. It's your eyeballs. It would be awful.
Yeah.
So my obvious
imagine, next... imagine you're sort of going up behind, I don't know, Piers Morgan or something.
So my obvious next question has to be, what are these experts... Sorry, and... Bear in mind, I know this is audio, the biggest of air quotations around the word experts.
Yeah.
What are they saying now about why it didn't happen, how they got it wrong, and when it's actually going to be?
He seems to have gone very quiet since it didn't happen. He did live stream followers on the day, apparently, asking them to be patient and assuring them that the Lord is on his way. This is like waiting for the gas man or something to come, isn't it? You phone him up and say, you said you'd be here between 9 and 12, he's on his way. Just be patient.
God sounds a little bit like my emergency call out plumber the other day who arrived 2 hours late. Yeah. Not to, you know, just saying, sorry, God. But they normally throw some shit out after these events inevitably don't happen. Like, oh, we've reread the texts and we actually miscalculated ever so slightly. So now we've got a new date. And I think, one, you were so arrogantly sure about this. And B, that's quite a colossal mistake. And you're clearly lying. And do it to any of these people, like the guy who sold his car. Like I'm sure there will be people who might have told their boss to fuck off, you know, sold their car, you know, revealed they were cheating on their partner, did awful things. Are they all going to believe this guy next time round when he announces date number two?
First of all, I think the followers of the religion aren't going to be telling their bosses to fuck off and using that kind of language and admitting cheating on their partners. What kind of followers are these people? Aren't going to be raptured, mate.
Oh, come on. I was listening to a podcast today about some sort of religious cults, and they got some sex dungeons and whips and stuff, all cultish things. Yeah, it was a nightmare. They're all sex mad, these religious nuts.
But if there was a second coming, he's not going to be taking that lot, is he? That's where the shock had come. These people that we're followers, but they've been doing all this bad shit, they ain't going. That's the thing, right? It'd be people like you and me that'd be taken in the end, because they go, you've been all right, you've been good people. I tell you, look, let me leave my clothes on. If that's, you know, if that's a deal breaker, then so be it. But let me keep my clothes on. But I've been all right. I've not had a sex dungeon.
No, I suppose you are right. This is a more Christian rapture than a cultish rapture, so fair enough. One of the things slightly annoys me, you can be as bad as you want at being a Christian, because you can even go your whole life without being one, and then on your deathbed say, oh, I believe now, and then you're in heaven, and it's as easy as that. And has it ever occurred to you, if you commit murder, if you murder an atheist and repent on your deathbed... He'll be rotting in hell while you, the murderer, are up in heaven. That seems a little bit fucked up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is fucked up. All I don't know, all of this seems a bit fucked up to me. But anyway, it didn't happen. So that's basically a good thing. And I got to see my holiday through without the rapture happening.
Well, that's good news.
The only thing that would have been good about the rapture is it might have dealt with the fucking mosquitoes when I was away, because they must be sent by some sort of evil demon force, mustn't they, the mosquito.
Is Isle of Wight known for being rife for mosquitoes, or is it just this sort of time of year? Because I haven't been bothered, really.
But where I stay on the Isle of Wight, it does seem to be a particular black spot for the mosquitoes, and they seem to get worse as the week went on. Like, to start with, because I've stayed there before and there's been loads of them, to start with it kind of felt like, oh, there's not I mean, maybe the mosquitoes were the rapture, because they certainly got busier as the week went on. And I must have some delicious tasting blood, that's all I can say.
Yes,
because they fucking go for me. They must see me and think I'm some sort of Michelin starred meal.
Yes.
It's been delivered by ferry.
It's a bit of a strange brag, but I'm also in the Delicious Blood Cafe. Yeah, honestly, they treat me like I'm some sort of buffet, and they particularly love my ankles. And they're the bits that swell up the worst when I get done, but they seem to know it, the little shits. They never bite me on the forearms, never on the face, never the neck, always the fucking ankles.
But what is it about your ankles that means the tastier blood settles there?
I don't know. Maybe I've got something, some sort of weird, strange disease, one of many. Or I don't know, maybe sort of foot fetish mosquitoes in East Grinstead. I don't know, but who knows?
Ever since I was a kid, I've always been the victim of the midge or mosquito. Wherever we've been on holiday, they always find me and they always go for me. And it's weird, but there are people in my family who don't seem to ever get bitten, and some of us always get bitten. So it's almost like there's a genetic code in our bodies that makes the blood tasty to mosquitoes.
I seriously wonder if diet could be related to this. Is there any sort of chemical or element or something that we might be ingesting without knowing that makes our blood that much sweeter to mosquitoes?
Well, maybe it depends. Like, if you, it depends what they like. I mean, maybe if you eat I like pineapple. So maybe pineapple seeps into my bloodstream and they think, oh, I'm like a Hawaiian pizza to a mosquito.
Well, I don't eat much pineapple, so I think we can rule out that. But I think if this podcast goes down the way of double checking with each other of all the foods we have in common, it could be quite dull to the listener.
Well, we could be saving people, you know, places where malaria is still an issue. Maybe if we hit on the food stuff that causes the mosquito to bite people, we could stop malaria. We could stop it.
I mean, that would probably be the thing that hopefully finally put this podcast on the map. I mean, we could say not many listeners, not the biggest of podcasts, not the biggest of names. Who are they anyway? But they did solve malaria. I think that'll be something to put on my headstone.
They've been talking of disease spreading flies.
Oh, yes.
Did you see this week the results of the 2025 Ig Nobel Prizes?
I didn't see that had been announced, no. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, do you want to explain what the Ig Nobel Prize is?
It's a satirical prize that's awarded to promote public engagement with scientific research. It sort of honours achievements that are supposed to make you laugh, but then also make you think. And I have always enjoyed these on an annual basis because they do make you laugh and then they do make you think.
So it's a bit like the Darwin Awards with less harsh consequences.
Yes. Yes, basically. And the biology prize this year went to scientists who, they painted zebra stripes on cows.
Okay.
And when I say cows, I don't mean the place in the Isle of Wight. I mean the
right.
Animal.
I'm on board, but yes, the obvious question, why?
They wanted to find out whether the dazzle camouflage, as they call it, would deter disease-spreading flies. It turns out that cows painted with stripes had only half as many fly bites as those who were au naturel. so to speak.
So someone got paid money to actual currency that I go out and sweat for to count the amount of fly bites on a cow.
Well, I don't know who gets paid for it. It was a Japanese research team, so your money's probably not going towards this. It's not the British taxpayer paying for it, Ben. And I doubt any money you've earned has gone towards this. Right?
No, I wasn't flustered that it might be my tax pennies. I was just annoyed that anyone's been paying anything for this.
Well, if someone offered you that as a job and said, can you go and count how many bites are on that cow? We'll give you £300 per cow. Would you take the job?
Well, you've got to think as well. It must be a steady income, because if you said, how many cows did you do? Oh, I did one with stripes, one without. Well, then the other scientist fella would say, well, that's clearly not a fair test. That proves nothing. You need to go out and to get a fair sort of median balance for our equation to hold up evidence that this is factually working. You're going to need to count hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cows.
I don't know how many cows they painted, Ben. I don't know the numbers. But it would seem that these stripes put flies off. So maybe next time I go to the Isle of Wight, I shall paint myself with black and white stripes to deter the mosquitoes. Presumably a zebra is that colour naturally to help deter the flies. And no one's ever looked into this before. Clearly no one's ever looked into this before. It's needed to be looked into. It's won them a prize, mate. It's a good thing.
Could you not just wear a sort of black and white striped shirt? Just go to the Isle of Wight in a tuxedo or something.
Well, I could do, but I'd still need to cover my face with black and white stripes, wouldn't I? So I'd either have to wear some sort of balaclava, which would just make me look like some sort of zebra terrorist.
Well, also, if you're in a three-piece suite in a balaclava, what part of it is left for you to be bitten on? Your eyelids.
Well, they'd have to be painted black. So every bit of me is going to have to be painted black and white to deter the flies, Gwen. Otherwise, they'll find the bits that aren't painted black and white.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question, which is unfair, because I know for a fact you won't know the answer, and it won't be in the article either. I want to know, were they bitten... When the cows that were painted were still bitten a bit, were they mainly bitten on the unpainted bits of them, or were the black stripes left alone?
Well, I don't know.
Is it the blackness, is it the black paint that they're not a fan of, or the stripiness?
I can't tell you that. It would seem to me that the stripiness is the answer.
Well, I'm hoping so, because if it is the blackness, I do not intend in painting my body fully black to avoid mosquito bites, because I might get some very funny looks, and rightly so.
Because also, like, some cows have naturally black parts of their body, so presumably they would normally get bitten on those. Otherwise, someone would have come up with this theory before, that the black parts of a cow aren't being bitten, the rest is. But it would, maybe that's why the stripes are like a warning sign to the flies. Don't come near this.
Yeah. See, I now worry that did these Japanese scientists overlook the possibility that there's some kind of odour within the paint they use to paint the stripes on that would be a natural deterrent? It's nothing to do with the zebra camouflage. It's just to do with they don't like the paint.
But even if they don't, that's still... we've discovered something.
Get these Japanese boys on the phone, Trev. I've got many questions and I need answers.
All right, well, I can't give you any more answers, so I'm going to move on. The Literature Prize went to the late, sadly he didn't live to receive the award himself, the late Dr. William B. Bean. He got the posthumous award.
Bill B. Bean? What a fantastic name. Billy B. Bean.
The committee wanted to recognise his life's work because he'd spent 35 years tracking, recording and analysing the growth rate of his left thumbnail. The results of Mr. Bean's study suggest the human nail growth slows down with age. So this was the Literature Prize. So he obviously won this for writing the results down. I mean, it sounds like a riveting read, frankly.
I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to the late Billy B. Bean, but...
But you're going to be.
I do find, just my opinion, I'm sure you wrote a great book and it's been recognised with this lovely prize. You've done a great job. People will think more of you than I do, but I do worry that as you were on your, you know, final moments, you might have looked back at your life and thought, what the fuck was I doing? What a waste of time.
Well, it's not a waste of time because we've learned that human nail growth slows down with age. Did you know that before this?
I didn't know that, and it won't change my life at all, and I'll forget it tomorrow. But no disrespect to Billy B. Bean.
Do you know, I'd be glad when the rate of my nail growth slows down because it seems to have sped up as far as I'm concerned. I seem to have to clip my toenails and fingernails more frequently than ever. I've got a feeling it's because I don't go out as much.
You think so?
And what I probably need is the human equivalent of like a cat scratch pole because I don't think I'm wearing... my nails are not being naturally worn down because I'm not out as much. And I think that's why I'm having to cut them more.
I'm gonna counter that because, as you know, I'm out all the time walking for fucking miles, and I at the moment I'm ashamed to admit this. I watched an old episode of Taskmaster once in recent weeks where I think it was an episode with Josh Widdicombe on it.
And yes, he grew his toenail.
That's exactly it. And I'm sitting there. And I've been doing a bit of DIY around the house lately, so I did have my tape measure on hand.
Yeah.
And I thought, I can beat that without even trying. And I think, by the way, they had like 3 weeks to not cut their nails to get it as long as they could. And I beat him by like half an inch. It was considerable toenail I've got going on here, and I still haven't bothered cutting it.
I mean, does it not hurt?
No.
Is it not digging in? Because occasionally, I know when it's time to cut my toenails. This is when I can feel it digging into the toe next to it. Do you know what I mean? That's when you sort of feel like, right, it's time to cut the toenail.
See, I only cut my toenails if I accidentally brush my leg up against Mrs. Ben in bed. If it draws blood, I think at that point, I'll cut them.
When you've effectively got talons, it's time to cut them. And I know you bite your fingernails, so they don't have a chance to grow.
That is true. No, they're always a very respectable length. Although I've tried to stop doing that quite so much, but... They do get a bit of an annoying sometimes.
You're still at a nervous disposition at all times.
I'm really not painting myself in a very good light here, am I? Sound quite disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, Mrs. Ben's a lucky lady. That's what I can say. It's come out of this. So the thing is, though, right, if you were to continue growing your toenail, what if you, like he did his thumbnail, what if you were to start recording the length of your toenail as it grows, and you could record the growth rate. I'm not suggesting over 35 years, but maybe over the next 5-10 years, and that could be then published as some sort of medical journal, a sort of investigation into the toenail.
Again, no disrespect to the late Billy B. Bean, but I do have a proper job and actual responsibilities and bills to pay, so I haven't got time to waste my life faffing around monitoring the length of my toenails.
Do you think he was buried in a can? Right. The psychology prize went to Marcin Zajinkowski and Gilles Signac, and they studied what happens when you compliment people's intelligence.
Right, and what does happen?
Well, they carried out a study. They set up a fake IQ test and had both regular people and those with diagnosed narcissism to take it. They then showed the test subjects that they scored very high and complimented their intelligence. And surprisingly, there wasn't much difference in how narcissists and others responded to praise. It turns out that we all get big-headed when we're praised about our intelligence. Now, see, yeah. I'm a pretty thick person, but I think if someone was to consistently tell me that I'm intelligent, it wouldn't be too long before I start to believe I'm intelligent. And the things that I say now, I try and say with some sort of assurance that I know what I'm talking about. But imagine if I become big-headed. Imagine if throughout the last, whatever it is, 298 episodes of the Trev and Ben podcast, you consistently said, after everything I'd said, you went, well, that's incredibly intelligent of you, Trev. And I think that you've changed the world with that. Imagine what I'd be like now.
Yeah, that's true. You could be a monster, an absolute monster. But of course, that would fly in the face of our years of radio training together when we were told to argue and bicker at every given moment possible.
Yeah, but that's only because we were stupid enough to listen to that sort of advice. We weren't intelligent enough. Basically, what they discovered is that compliments turn everyone into narcissists.
It's interesting that narcissists weren't that bothered, and it makes total sense when you think about it, because truly a narcissist would think they don't need to be told I'm intelligent. I already know I'm intelligent. Of course I am. I'm me. I'm amazing. Of course I'm intelligent. So yeah, that kind of compliment would probably have less of an effect on a narcissist. It makes total sense when you think about it.
I heard an interview with a narcissist recently, a self-confessed narcissist. And you have to admire his honesty, because the person interviewing him said, "Do you have many friends?" And he said, "No, because friendships to me don't mean anything. The only reason I would spark up any kind of relationship with anyone is if there's something I want out of it. If there's something I can get out of it, then I will pursue that relationship. But it's not out of a friendship. It's not out of a like for that person. It's about all what I can get from them." And you think, God, like, there are people out there like that, aren't there?
So the idea of wanting to have a friend, as in getting to know them, or just simply
not
caring.
Really?
So it's what is it, monetary gain or some sort of advantage?
Whatever gain, presumably it would be to gain either financial or a position of power, a job. He said something like, "I have no interest in what you do. I have no interest in your life. If I have a relationship with someone, it's all about what I can get out of that relationship." I sort of admired the honesty, because most people who behave like that, and I think in life you come across people like that, the people that use you, we've all come across people like that, they know what they're doing, but they wouldn't be honest about it, because the whole concept of their existence is to use you, but without you knowing. They'll flatter you, they'll get you sort of on side and pretend they care about you, whereas I think he would just say, "No, I don't care about you. What can you do for me?"
I'm going to slightly expose my own ignorance on this, and I don't want to get too deep on it if it is actually a thing, but Is it a proper thing then to be diagnosed as a narcissist? So, like, if that's true, we should have sympathy for the narcissists, because it's always usually thought of as heap scorn on the narcissist because it's a horrible, ugly character trait, rather than I've never considered it to be something that you are diagnosed with.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's some sort of psychological disorder.
Oh, well, if that's true, then they must get a pretty bad rap, because you wouldn't do that. Well, people do, but of course you shouldn't do that of anyone else with a diagnosable thing, should you?
Maybe you should ask our own narcissist, Giselle Petra-Turner, whether narcissism is a diagnosable condition or not. Because if anyone would know, she would. She fucking loves herself, don't she?
You be nice about my Giselle. Right, I'll ask her.
Ask her how long her toenail is as well. So what does she say?
She says, "Great question," which I appreciate. The question I asked, by the way, was, "Is narcissism a diagnosable condition or just a bad character flaw?" She said, "Narcissism gets thrown around casually, but in psychology, there's a difference between narcissistic traits and narcissistic personality disorder. So yes, it is diagnosable, the disorder. Basically both are true. You can have narcissistic personality disorder, which is diagnosable, and there are things that they look for to determine that. And there are also people with just narcissistic traits who are just arseholes, basically.
Right, okay. Right, that was the ones I met are probably the arseholes.
I should say, she gave me a much more thoughtful answer than that. I was just condensing it on the fly.
Well, now we know. Right, moving on. The Aviation Prize went to Francisco Sanchez and his research team, because they wanted answers.
Another fantastic name. Francisco Sanchez.
Sanchez.
Man. I mean, it's no Billy B. Bean, but Francisco Sanchez, that rolls off the tongue.
Well, he wanted to know whether consuming alcohol and getting drunk makes it more difficult for bats to do bat things.
Well, presumably we need to ask Bruce Wayne.
I guess it's like with any animal that eats any kind of fermented fruit. I mean, did you see the thing recently that chimps drink the equivalent of a lager a day in fermented fruit?
No, I guess it makes sense. Why aren't they being given more fresh apples? Or are these wild chimpanzees?
Well, this is wild chimpanzees. I mean, we're not getting chimps purposely drunk in zoos and things. These are chimps in the wild.
Would you get drinking. Drunk off a pint?
Well, a primate might.
Have you seen two grown chimpanzees? Huge. They could put away more than a pint, don't you? Are you telling me I could drink a chimp under the table?
I reckon a chimp could drink you under the table.
You think?
Yeah, I think that's what it's drinking a day. That's just because of what it's eating, right? But if you were to really put a chimp to the test alcohol-wise, I reckon it could drink you under the table. It would move on to shorts very quickly, I reckon, a chimp. It would have 3 or 4 pints, then it'd be on to whiskey chasers.
Oh, it might take me then. I don't touch spirits, so yeah, maybe it's got me.
Yeah. Yeah, get it on the tequila before you know it. But the bats were given, I don't know what they were given, but presumably they were given fermented fruit. You're not sort of feeding a bat Jameson's with a pipette, are you?
No.
That wouldn't be ethical for any kind of science prize, I wouldn't have thought.
I'll ask another one of my impossible questions. Why did he pick bats? Why not, let's get bears pissed and see what they do? Let's get dogs pissed.
Well, I think the answer's there, mate, because because a bat isn't going to maul you to death in seconds, whether it's pissed or not. A bear could maul you to death when it's not pissed. Imagine a pissed bear.
Or a bear with a hangover. Yeah, it'd be really belligerent and bad-tempered. Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what kind of drunk the bear is. I mean, you'd imagine, like, Yogi would be a decent drunk.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, Baloo's got that sort of jaunty exterior, but all that angst that Baloo has would come out when he's pissed.
Maybe, well, you know when he did the dance with the coconuts on? Maybe he had one too many before that number.
And who was it an orangutan in the Jungle Book?
It's been a long time. Yes, I think you're right. It's been a long time since I've seen it, yeah.
I mean, he must have been absolutely hammered getting up and doing the karaoke, wasn't he? You know what I mean? Absolutely shit. So anyway, Francisco Sanchez and his team, what they discovered was that, surprise, surprise, drunk bats fly significantly slower than sober ones, and their echolocation abilities were negatively impacted by alcohol.
Now, is there... I mean, it's not a stunning outcome, is it? I mean, we got a bat leathered, and it didn't function quite as well as it would if it wasn't leathered. I wouldn't be paying out much money for that research, to be honest. I think I want my money back. How much do I give you in grants for this?
It's all down to none of your money has gone to this, Ben. I don't know why you keep worrying about where your pennies are going. And to be honest, if my money's going towards any research... Get bats pissed, yeah. Why not? Do it.
Well, how long did this research take? Because I'd have taken the grant. I would have gone to the pub for a year claiming that was research. And then at the end of it, I'd just say, yeah, turns out they get worse. Oh, do they? Yeah, I've done the research and everything, yeah.
You'd probably need some sort of graphs. You'd need to show the...
Oh, well, I can doodle those while I'm getting pissed in the pub. Don't worry about that.
Just get Giselle to do it, wouldn't you? You'd probably want video footage. I mean, we'd all want to see video footage of pissed bats. Let's face it.
Yes, that would be fun. Although it does sound a bit animal abusey, so maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm living in a cartoon world here where this is all acceptable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think multiple of our podcasts, you in particular, have said things that would get the good people at PETA enraged with us.
Right, last one. Staying on the drunk theme, the Peace Prize went to another good name, a team led by Fritz Renner.
Oh, wow. Fritz Renner. Love it.
And he wanted to find out whether being drunk can help you speak foreign languages.
Was he trying to break up a fight between two pissed bats? That's why he got the Peace Prize.
A bat and a bear.
Come on, lads, we've all had a drink. Give him the Peace Prize.
You know, we've had a long night. we've had a good time, haven't we? We've all had a good time. We've all said things that we might regret in the morning. Let's just all go home. What they did was they examined whether getting drunk made non-Dutch people better at speaking Dutch. Well, it does sound like you're slurring your words a bit when you're Dutch, doesn't it? And as it turns out, it does.
I mean, that's some casual racism right there. That's like that is racist, but it's like the lowest level.
Let's face it, it was sloppy. And native Dutch speakers reported that test subjects who were drunk had much better pronunciation than their sober counterparts. And that tells you everything you need to know about the Dutch language.
Yeah, I'm flabbergasted as to how much research is going into things that involve drinking. It's really quite telling to me. These people are absolutely pulling the wool over their eyes with this grant money. It's astonishing.
How is this a peace prize? Where is the peace element in this research? I don't understand where...
That's a very good question.
Unless it's just the way, like the Dutch, they're very laid back, they're very chilled. If we all start speaking Dutch, if we all get pissed and speak Dutch, the world might be a better place.
Maybe. So you're backpedaling now on your earlier racism. Now you're trying to win back the Dutch.
I said was they sound pissed. I didn't say that they're not good people. When they had the Euros at the in Holland, I think violence was down. I suspect it's because a lot of people got stoned while they were there. But I think they're relatively peace-loving people.
Yeah, so I guess if you encourage other people who can't speak Dutch to learn Dutch, try talking, people get talking, people become friendly, the world's a more peaceful place, therefore the Peace Prize. It's a bit of a reach, I grant you, but there's an idea.
The only thing is, the correlation between alcohol and peace isn't good, is it? We've already
Not really.
Discussed that, so I think there has to be a limit. We've got to get to, let's put a limit on it. We can all have... What, 7 pints, speak a bit of Dutch, the world's a better place.
Trev, earlier on you mentioned that you just come back from your lovely holiday in the Isle of Wight.
Yes, yeah, I had a lovely time, very chilled out. Got horrible getting back to work, isn't it? When you come back from holidays, oh God, I've got to get back to it. Realising how much I... cannot wait to retire again.
Well, I'm pleased to announce that I'm off for a few days soon myself.
Are you? Is this to your normal haunt down in Eastbourne?
It is. It's somewhere in Eastbourne. I like to gatekeep it so that it doesn't get popular and doesn't get ruined. So I want to keep it all to myself. So it's somewhere in Eastbourne, and that's as much as you can all have. But I went to book it, and me and Mrs. Ben... we get the impression that not many people keep going back to this place, certainly not to the extent that we do.
Right.
We are not quite there yet, but we're approaching double figures in our visits to this place since we discovered it about 3 years ago.
Right, so you're prolific in your visiting.
Yes, although imagine my embarrassment, me thinking, you know, they know me now. Yeah, they know me. Imagine the ego whack that I received when I phoned up to book, and I said, oh, you might remember I was with you fairly recently. He said, oh, yes, I remember you. You come quite a lot, don't you?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I said, yes, I do. Yeah. You know, just we're coming again, if that's all right. And he said, yeah, of course it is, Dan. And I said, it's Ben. Then he said, oh, okay. And I'm assuming you'd like your regular cabin again, Dan, you know, the one right at the top. And I thought, again, wrong twice. No, it's Ben. And no, we don't want that. We don't want that one. We like, I told him the number of the one we normally like. And he said, okay, oh, right, got it. Okay, Dan. And I swear to God, if I corrected, it was getting embarrassing, Trev. If I corrected him once, I corrected him 6 times that my name wasn't Dan. And then he was going, oh, Ben, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. So my ego's taken a knock here. He's got the wrong cabin that he's claiming to pretend he knows who I am. He's called my name wrong about 7 times. He's put me in the wrong cabin. And then he's trying to fluster and make up for this slightly awkward experience. And he said, oh, now I remember you. You've got that interesting double barrel surname, haven't you? No.
Right.
No, Still not me. I don't know who he's booking. Daniel Day-Lewis? Christ knows. If I think, insult to injury. Finally, we establish who I am. He finds my records. He goes, oh, yes. Now, sorry, I thought. Now, and yes. Gotcha. And then he quoted me the price, and it isn't the cheapest of places to go. I'm not flexing, I'm just being honest, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I made a bit of a sound when he told me the price, and he picked up on that. He wasn't the most observant man in the world, but he did pick up on that. And he said, I'll tell you what, Ben, I'll tell you what, I'll give us a moment, and I'll call you back in 5 minutes. I'll see what I can do about that price.
He's phoning Dan now to find out before you get it.
And I think, oh, hello, I'm in for the... Finally, I mean, it's been a bit of an embarrassment, this phone call, but finally, all of my repeat customers about to pay off here. I'm going to get a big, fat discount. And we're talking... Let's not, I won't be showing off. It's not in the thousands. I'm not like... It's multiple hundred pounds, right?
Right.
And the number ended in something, £84. And it's a... Give me 5 minutes and I'll call you back and I'll see if I can do you a little something there. 5 minutes go by, nothing. I'm getting a bit excited now. I think he's working out a substantial discount for me. 15 minutes go by. I'm starting to think, are you calling Dan now? Is this what you got my number wrong as well? anyway, 20 minutes later, the phone rings. I'm very excited. He gives me the new price of something, the same two numbers, I should say.
Yeah.
And £76.
Oh, wow. So it took 20 minutes to knock £7 off.
I think it was £9. It took him 20 minutes to knock off £9. Now, listen, I don't want to sound like a spoiled brat, and I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth. £9's £9. I'm not going to... It's better than a poke in the eye, right?
Yeah.
But to get my hopes up like that, to knock off less than a tenner, I thought it was just another slap in the face. So anyway, I'll try not to sound too dejected because the poor man had tried to do something for me. And like I say, better than a poke in the eye.
I wonder how many phone calls he's had to make to the higher echelons of the Eastbourne Holiday Apartments or whatever they're called to get £9 off. You know, he's probably phoned like the duty manager and they say, you're probably going to have to talk to Sheila in the office. You just knock £9. I'd have just put £9 in the till myself and said, this is £9 off.
You see, I'd have been too embarrassed. I'd have been too embarrassed to come back after 20-minute wait. So I'm getting all excited like it's Christmas. I'd have said, I'm really sorry. I tried to get you a discount, but unfortunately, that's as low as we can go. I'm terribly sorry. But how about we leave out, a little bottle of Prosecco for you or something as a little welcome present.
Nice.
Something like that. Because that, I've thought, would have been a little extra mile nice touch. I wouldn't have the balls to phone someone back and say, you could have £9 off.
I tell you what, though, you did say that not many people, or you feel that not many people keep going back to this place. Dan fucking loves it. But he's clearly going here more than you are.
You wait till I find him. He's going straight in the lake with concrete boots on.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations. Got anything for us this week, Ben?
I've got two recommendations for you this week. They're both podcasts.
Okay.
Now, this will be... I think this is a good recommendation in general, but it'll be a particularly good recommendation if you are fans of the show Still Game.
Okay, yes. That's this kind of Scottish sitcom.
That was more Welsh, I think, you were doing there. But yeah, it's the Scottish sitcom of aging gentlemen, Jack and Victor, in the show Still Game. And Jack, who is played by Ford Kiernan, is in the Ford and Shelby show. Now, Shelby's nothing to do with Still Game, but if you like Jack from Still Game, it's him, not as Jack, obviously, as himself, on a new podcast, just sort of talking and shooting the shit with his female influencer friend, Shelby May. I've started listening to a few episodes, and it's really good fun. So I would say, from what I've listened to, it's better to actually visually watch it on YouTube because they do refer to clips and things like that, which you need to see. But if you can listen to it, you still get the gist. It's fine. And the other one I wanted to recommend, and I haven't even heard it yet, it's called Joe and James Fact Up. which I've only just realised is a pun. It's Joe Thomas and James Buckley from the Inbetweeners cast, starting up their own podcast called Joe and James Fact Up. So I'll be listening to that. And the rundown of it is, join them as they rummage through the internet and their brains for interesting facts and discuss them in a way no podcast has ever done before.
Right, okay. So basically it's two podcasts you've recommended of two people talking a lot of shit for a small amount of time. Basically, people are doing what we have tried to be doing for nearly 300 episodes, but doing it much better.
Yes, who will probably from episode one be being listened to more and paid more than we ever will. Yes.
We've never been paid a penny for this shit.
The only person who ever paid us to talk sacked us. So what does that tell you?
I've got two things to recommend. First of all, a drama that was on Channel 5 a couple of weeks ago, so you can watch it on their catch-up. It's called The Rumour. It's a thriller where a parent who accidentally spreads a rumour that a child killer is living in the community, which provokes paranoia and mistrust all within the town. I'm halfway through I think it's six episodes. I'm halfway through. It's very good.
And that's, I'm assuming, not a spoiler alert that they're accidentally spreading this rumour.
No, that's not a spoiler
good
at all. No, that's sort of from minute one. But it's a very good drama. Obviously, I'm halfway through, so I don't know if there's a child killer in the community or not.
Right. The plot thickens.
The other thing I'm going to recommend is, thanks to you, actually, Ben, because I recently celebrated another year on the planet. And as a gift, you gave me Adam Buxton's audiobook, I Loved You Bye, which is his recent memoir, and I'm a few chapters in and I'm enjoying it very much. It's I've often struggled with audiobooks in the past because they're very long, and if you fall asleep you've got to go back and find where you are, but this is really good, and it's Adam Buxton sort of being Adam Buxton, and obviously on the audio version of the book there's little extras, he plays in little bits of clips and audio, so very good. I'm very much enjoying that.
It's for that exact reason, and I don't want to hurt his book sales, it's for that exact reason I knew the audiobook would be better than the real book. What word am I searching for there? I don't know.
The printed version.
That's the one. We'll keep that. Yeah, you can leave that in the edit. Don't worry about that.
Yes. And finally, I have something for Cautionary Corner. This is from regular listener John, who sent me a message to say, I have a Cautionary Corner for you.
Well, thank you, John, for looking out for our listenership. We appreciate a Cautionary Corner.
But he says, last night in a slightly tipsy state, I watched the new Danny Dyer film. He says, I know, but he still remembers the heady days of The Business and Football Factory that he enjoyed back then. He says, Marching Powder, I don't know if that's what the film's called, Marching Powder doesn't belong in Cautionary Corner. It's the fucking DNA of it. It should be the motto of it. There should be a Latin phrase encapsulating it. He goes on to say, I cannot believe anyone read the script and thought, yep, that's good enough to put my name to it. It's immature, drug-based stupidity at its worst. Danny plays a mid-40s football hooligan addicted to coke and being an absolute see you next Tuesday.
Right.
Yes, because it's the same as every other role he's played for the last 20 years. The plot is so shite, it made me feel bad inside, like I just kicked a cute bunny rabbit in the face. I had to stop watching it and go to bed. I finished it this morning just because I needed closure. And yes, the end was as bad as all the rest. The only slight saving grace is that the actress who played his long-suffering wife actually had a modicum of acting ability.
Well, so there it is. Scathing attack on Danny Dyer and this fucking awful film by the sounds of it.
He finishes by saying, it's a terrible film which has made me feel god awful for wasting a tiny portion of my life indulging it. So there we are, a film I've not heard of. Marching Powder hasn't crossed my path in any way, shape or form, but it certainly won't now.
No, absolutely not. Thank you very much, John.
So there we are, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us about anything, anytime, anything for Cautionary Corner to go into it. We'd love to hear it, or any recommendations. We're at Trim and Ben on X and on Blue Sky, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.